Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's good, everybody? It is our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival. And we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast. Festival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
That's how we own it.
What's up, family? It's your girl, Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your host of Street Politicians, the place where the streets and
politics meet.
Lord have mercy. Yes. I am tired. I just want you to know that. Sleepy every day. Since we've had the last several weeks of daylight savings, my body is just, it didn't work.
It'd be sneaking up. Daylight savings just sneaked up on. I didn't even realize it. Only reason I realized, you want me to know, is that I never changed the time in my car from the last daylight savings time, right?
So now it's
right.
Oh,
so true. I was like, I'm looking, wait, this time supposed to be, and I was like, it's matching my phone, something wrong. And I asked
you was looking at it knowing that it was an hour back.
Exactly.
Or hour ahead.
It was an hour earlier, so I was like.
No, it should have been an hour back, because then we go forward quickly. Yeah.
We went forward.
Oh, so you didn't change
your
phone.
Was already hour.
Nah, early. You bugging. That was a long time ago.
So I'm sitting there, my son, I'm like, yo, did we do daylight savings? He said, yeah, that. I'm like, okay, I guess. So that's how I found out. Man. Shout out to Cameron for educating
For educating you. Yes, man, sir. But I feel like the last several weeks, I know something happened where I didn't get my full sleep. Because, you know, I need 4 extra hours just to cover if I lose 1 hour because I love the bed. Lord, that's my favorite place to be. My bed. You know what? I can do anything from my bed. Let me just be clear. I have planned some of the most historic occasions in American history from my bed. And Linda Sarsour, our partner at Until Freedom, is able to do the same. We can stay in our pajamas for the whole day and have an event completely planned or a whatever campaign, and people can't touch us.
I mean, listen, that's a skill set. I can't do it because I feel like if I'm in the bed, I'm losing. I'm missing out on something. I'm lazy. I feel like the most shiftless Negro in the world. So I got to get up and move around. My thoughts come from working out, walking. The best ideas that I ever had was me either working out or just walking around. And those have materialized into the best things for me. So sleeping in the bed, it don't work.
I didn't say sleeping.
Or laying, just being in the bed.
I didn't say sleeping in the bed.
I feel like claustrophobic in the bed for too long. It's like, nah, I got to get up. Got to go.
Okay. Well, that is definitely something that I see in men, a lot of men particularly, that it's like laying down all day is not. My father doesn't lay down all day. It's not gonna happen. My mom really never laid down all day either, but she sure would get her a few more hours more than my dad. So for all of you folks who are watching us today, you are watching pre-record and listening. You're listening and watching a pre-recorded show. We're running a series on money. We are talking about black folks and our money. And we are not about to let this crypto metaverse NFT world miss us. And so there are spaces where all people talk about is that. But we have folks like you who may be tuning in for political information. You may be tuning in for what's happening in the movement. And so we want to make sure we bring that world to this world so that we are on the cutting edge of wherever people are spending money and making money, more importantly, and just making sure that our communities are up to speed. Because we know that while our politics are important, it is equally important for us to know the politics of our money. Facts. And to know what's happening in our society. And so with that being said, while we are traveling, you guys know that we are on this pilgrimage, going on a pilgrimage. We are headed on a pilgrimage to the continent of Africa, covering a few different areas. And while that's happening, we tape these shows specifically so that folks would be, you know, just into a series that from show to show, you learn more and more and more and more. And hopefully today will be no different.
Yes, it will be no different because we're trying to teach you because we're the number one show in the world.
Well, I'm trying to learn.
I'm trying to, but I already learned. You're not getting. Don't worry about it. I'm not going to say that. Don't worry about it.
Here we go. I promise you all that by the end of this show, my son is going to believe that he is ready.
I'm figuring it out. Listen, the last Earn Your Leisure show, they put me on the path. I was like, oh, I started doing my little studying. I said, I might get this. So I know Key's going to drop something that's going to push it over the level. But I know you're going to push it to the next level for me.
Hey everyone, I am so excited. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with a Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and have it shared with a Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You won't want to miss this because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill of your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcast festival for more details.
State Farm Insurance gets it. Representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. State Farm understands and wants to help protect our communities by investing in our future, building off the hard work our parents have done before us. We all are looking to create generational wealth so that our families and generations behind us have a better starting point than we did. That begins with financial literacy. State Farm helps fund programs like Project Ready, a National Urban League program committed to the educational achievement of Black and brown youth. To date, participants have been awarded over $11 million in scholarships offers as a direct result of contributions from State Farm. At Eating While Broke, we hear inspiring rags-to-riches stories on each episode from our guests, but with State Farm, you can begin to write your own success story. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Opportunity is not equally distributed. To every Black entrepreneur listening, I want to make sure you have the tools and resources you need to grab your next opportunity. That's why I'm telling you about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 million black businesses initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive 120-day free trial at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
So as promised, we're keeping with this series of conversation on money, and we're talking to an incredible leader, yes, one of the leading voices on, or really not just finance for finance purposes, but really more so about how we as Black people have to do a better job of pooling our resources, of understanding these industries, mm-hmm, and using this $1.4 trillion that we have at our disposal to really become self-sustained. And I, you know, listen a lot to this brother. I know he's our brother. We listen a lot to him and learn so much. And he really is one of the leading voices in this nation on the sustainability of Black folks from a financial perspective. And so now, first of all, he was born in St. Louis. I didn't know that. I, you know, he kind of act like he was born in New York, but you know, that's the whole, we won't hold it against him. But anyway, born in St. Louis, raised in West Oakland. Now that I can see, right? Mm-hmm. A thought leader, an entrepreneur, a public speaker, and most of all, a teacher. He is a teacher. Our brother, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining Street Politicians 19 Keys.
Thank you all for having me, man. Two of the
peace
most
God, prolific, peace revolutionary God, peace
people.
Peace to the gods,
man.
Nah, it's a blessing to be here.
So listen. So you know what, you know, like when people see 19 Keys, he's just so polished. He's all, he knows the perfect words to say. Like sometimes I listen to you talk, I'd be like, yo, how could you can't say it better than that. Like the perfect words. I want you to give a full understand who is 19 Keys, like, because we just most of us have just found you. Like I met you years ago, our brother, yeah, Derek Grace, you know, when we went to his birthday party, and that was the first, yeah, time I met you. And from then, you know, I've been impressed and just following you and seeing how you've evolved even from then. And at that point, you was one of the leading thought leaders, in my opinion, at that time. And I've watched you evolve over the last few years. But tell us, what is the origin? Where did you come from? Who are you?
Well, can I just say this Derek Grace party, I don't know why I wasn't there, but it must have been a real shindig, because I keep hearing about this party over and over again.
It was legendary. That was a very legendary night. But no, I'm... yeah, so I go by 19 Keys, and that more so just speaks upon how I unlock minds and how I utilize information to get people to tap into their higher self or their higher potential. You know, that part that usually lies dormant, you understand me, and most people, and don't usually have keys in their life, somebody that can help them unlock their potential or knowing which knowledge or resource to seek to tap into themselves. And, you know, coming from Oakland, you understand me, being raised in Oakland got a different kind of energy. You understand me? And when I grew up out there, you know, it was the Black Muslim militant street culture at the same time that I grew up around. So I always seen Black men who had voice, who had power, who had money, who were militant, who had status, who had political favor, the whole nine. So I grew up seeing Black men in organizations. And I think from an early age, I was inspired by that. You understand me? Where growing up, we went to a Black Muslim pirate school and we had to, you know, speak on stages. Like I seen some recent videos of myself when I was like 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And some of the things they had me saying when I was younger are some of the same quotes I use today. You understand me? And so I never considered myself to be a speaker until, you know, I got paid for it. But there was times when there would be protests and rallies in the streets of Oakland, and I grab a mic and get up there speaking because I ain't see no black man. It'd be a crowd of white people talking about black issues. Mm. So I wanted there to be a voice that represented who I was. And then afterwards and days later, there will be people that come up and be like, man, that was so powerful what you said, blase, blase. So I'm listening. I always take in feedback. You understand me? That if I have a talent that's real that I can utilize to help encourage and change the world in any capacity, I'm going to do so, right? And at the same time, I've always been an entrepreneur, been a hustler, been a designer, right? And I've utilized all of my skill sets, and I believe that they all really are one. Right. It's just, I think it's just, you know, speaking is an art, you know, creating is an art, doing business is an art. You know, I think even being a revolutionary is an art. You understand me? The way you go about it and the way you design these things. So I've always took all of my passions, being a Muslim, being militant, being a man, being a speaker, being an entrepreneur, everything that I was raised under, everything that I've seen. And I try to be a solution for the things that I think were unaligned with me or wrong. Because I've seen those same empires of black men fall by ego, fall by, you know, they killing each other. They, you know, jealousy and all sort of issues come up and rise. So I've tried to create multiple groups where there were black men and women coming together. We traveled the world and done business. And I've always tried to stop it from getting to that point where, you know, it failed, you know. The same issues is basically the same exact patterns and cycle that happen almost in every single organization, right? So I always say that I've never been impressed. I haven't been impressed by too much that I see in our culture because it doesn't matter unless it has longevity. You can always start something for a short period of time, it's successful for a year, 5 years, but if it don't get past them decade marks to be successful, then it don't really matter, right? And so I've always tried to create things that can be sustainable. And what I learned, though, is I had to start with myself and make my own character, my own brand, and my own movement sustainable. And so that's what I worked on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, listening to you, when you talk about that militancy, it's two things that come up for me. I also was the 8-year-old on the stage, you know, young girl. People think that we just kind of popped up out of nowhere because they just learned of who we are. But actually, the history of how long some of us have been doing this work, it goes deep. And it was the same for me. I was 7 and 8 years old singing the Black National Anthem, speaking at rallies and organizing in Harlem. And so I'm just thinking of what that looks like and how we have been through so many different phases of this movement since we were children. And the other thing, just thinking about you coming out of Oakland, it makes so much sense. I didn't know that until I did deeper research on your personal life and your background for the purpose of this interview. But knowing that the Black Panthers were there in Oakland and that the roots of the Black Panthers run so deep into Oakland, that helps me understand you so much, you know, because it's like that militancy that you're talking about, you got it from a different type of movement, you know, and they weren't the polished Black Panthers. Yeah. They was the real deal when they were in Oakland, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's the same with the Muslims that was out there, because you had two different sects. You had, my mother grew us up in the Nation of Islam, and then my father, he was at your Black Muslim Bakery, which was basically a different paramilitary street organization. And every week, though, we would go outside and we would drill in every hood, you understand me? But they was fearful of the Muslims, because them Muslims was crazy, you understand me? The type of Muslims that would kill you, you understand me? And that was well known, like that organization ran for 40 years and then lost because of corruption. But imagine you riding down the street and you see a motorcade of all 10 black cars, Muslims in black suits, you understand me? And they hop out and all of a sudden you got 100 men on the sidewalk to start drilling in your hood, you understand me? And the purpose was that to create a demonstration so that it attracted to young men and women to power and show them something of a difference in their environment. And then at the same time, you know, they had talked to the generals in every hood, and it was an understanding that, you know, we got our own army. We coming in to save our people, right? And at the end of the day, it's not something we negotiating with y'all. This is our stance. This is what we taking, right? And so seeing that, and also seeing those same black men have businesses, and my father running that organization as well. You know, I learned a lot about that structure just through watching. And then the FOI classes that we would go to every Monday night, we would be in there, and that's where I learned a lot, right? Where we got to be in there boxing, we learned spirituality, we learned business, we learned discipline. I see things where if a man then got in trouble that week, he might get beat up. You understand me? He got an FOI beat down. It was a little different, you know? So I seen a completely different paradigm in reality. And then when we go back to the streets, because we in Oakland, right? I'm going in with this militant mindset, but then these cats that's growing up there, they don't have none of that. Mm-hmm. You know, they exist in a completely different reality. So it was almost, you got a duality. You living in two worlds at once, mm-hmm. you know? And yes. I've always figured out a way to combine that, because I go back and forth between Oakland and St. Louis. So I left St. Louis when I was two, grew up in Oakland up into my teenage years. And then I went back to St. Louis, right? And then that's when they couldn't even believe none of the militant stories I told them. They thought I was fabricating it all. They were like, come on, man. You weren't part of the Muslim mafia, military. I'm like, all right. But that gave me my third eye to be able to, I was in the streets, but I wasn't of it. You understand me? So even when we did what we did, I was always the one giving the game and the advice to everybody else on how we should move on a different level. You understand me? And everybody that grew up with me can protest to that as well. So when they see me today, they're like, man, Key's always been like this. Now he just has a platform to magnify those thoughts.
That's amazing, because I see myself in the same picture, like the duality, being in the streets, yeah. but never feeling like you of the streets. And even when we was doing negative, I was trying to talk about, like, we should be doing this. And if we're going to do this, then we need to make sure this is happening. So I was always that one person that was always having a different perspective. But when I listened to you, you know, just paying attention to you, you're very big on creating our own, just building our own, just not waiting on anybody, just building our own. At what point did you come to that when you, you know, doing all the studies, you've been around, you know, so many different thought leaders and different organizations. When did you come into your own and say, yo, this is what we need to create? This is how I think we need to go about it. Because you have a different motto. Like, I've heard different things, but the way that you go about it is something that people from the street can gravitate to, but yeah. also has this militancy. So how did you develop that?
You know, it's just through studying and seeing the rise and fall of, you know, essentially small little empires, right? And it's a term called aggregate efficiency, where economists they talk about the amount of energy you put into something based on the amount of energy you actually get out, and whether it's an efficient model of doing something. So I looked at the idea of what a revolutionary was, right? Because I think that was that concept is something you gravitate towards when you grow up in those type of environments. You understand me? And then I said, well, you know, if I wanted to be a traditional revolutionary, I followed a traditional path. But then I have to ask myself, do I want the same results that they got? And is that the most effective way to go about it, given that we are now, you know, the times that we are in with technology and resources? Mm. So I had to come to the conclusion, like, nah, that wouldn't be the best use of my time to get those results I want, right? So then I had to ask myself, what is the results we want, right? The idea is, like, it ain't financial literacy, it's just an aspect. Financial liberation is the key, right? And completely releasing ourselves from those contracts. And the deeper I study, right, in all fields, let me know how deep in the depths of these issues and problems are. That even if we solve one, right, there's always a deeper underlying issue that exists there. And most people can only solve the issue based on how much they understand the problem, right? So the more I go into and study, whether it was Marcus Garvey, Noble Drew Ali, you understand me, studying the history between, even the fuse between different leaders and their different styles, right? I think studying the Honorable Elijah Muhammad gave me an understanding difference, because his difference between most leaders, I think that he understood the enemy more, right? I think that was the difference between him and other leaders, is that they was like, nah, we can do it based on just educating or assimilating, or we can just get the business down. He was like, y'all don't understand the depths of the devil though. You understand me? If I thought that was all we needed to do, then of course I would go with that model. But you have to understand that this problem exists much deeper, right? And so I believe that he constructed his solutions based on a full understanding of the problem, right? And so even when I look at the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I don't look at him as a lip professor, somebody who delivered just the message, but somebody who built, right? And who was a millionaire, multimillionaire. And most people don't look at it from that aspect that he had financial success, right? He had an airplane and hospitals and universities, and he had his own barbershops, and he had his own import-export business with fish and poultry and supermarkets and a multitude of different things, trust and real estate. Like, they would have their savers days and talk about all of the financial aspect of the Nation of Islam. So that was something I gravitated towards as I started doing my study and saying that, how can you say that you come from or study under a person if you haven't went as far as them or further? So that means that you haven't evolved their message yet until it produces students or people that take that message further, because that's what the message is supposed to do for you. Not just so that you follow it, but you become it, right? And so taking and internalizing that, and then seeing men who tried to internalize that message and failed at it because of the corruption in their character, you understand me, were all things that I set out not to become, right? And then studying whether it was Martin Luther King in a way that he went about as a strategist, because I didn't grow up liking Martin Luther King, right? I think most of us that grow up in that more militant, we think of the turn of cheek. But then I learned how militant he was and how strategic he was. And funny enough, I learned that when I went to a documentary in Chicago with Nick Cannon that he had through.
And he was mad disciplined too. Dr. King was super disciplined. You know, he knew exactly what he was trying to get done. And I think that whether you agree with all of his tactics or not, he never tried to be anybody else other than exactly who he had set out to be. And I think that says a lot about a man, that you don't have to agree with them, but you know that they're not going to change based upon the room that they're in.
Yeah, and he just had a strategy for everything he did. Like, he wasn't, if I'm marching, then I need to get this thing in the press, and then this thing is going to affect to move this politician, and then we can get this bill. He was getting leverage each time he was doing something.
That's right.
Right? And, like, his men had to go train up in order to be nonviolent, because, you know, it takes a certain level of discipline to get slapped in the face and to get punched and to not shake and stir your spirit doing that, and then people don't break rank. So I respected that aspect of it. It's the same thing with, you know, Malcolm X or the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, or any, somebody asked me which leader I think I am. And at the time, I believe I'm an amalgamation of all. Like, I study all of them to take what I believe is the best frequency that they had, that I believe we should teach our children to evolve into. And oftentimes we look at which one that we pick and we kind of pit them against each other as if they had to be separate forces. So economics, spirituality, family, liberation, politics, right? Technological advancement. You can find all of those in each one of those leaders, but we still haven't went as far as them yet. So now we deal with a different kind of people, and our people have more information than any other point in time than any other teacher came and tried to teach us. They came at a point where a lot of people were wholly ignorant, you understand me? And now you got the internet. And so it's a much harder uphill battle. So
they still wholly ignorant as far as I'm concerned.
They still wholly ignorant in a lot of areas for surely, but they more informed now. So it's harder to teach a people who already think they know something. You understand me? And that they have a certain level of consciousness that they filter all the information that you give them. Plus they have the background of thinking about all the leaders that have failed, and then they filter you through that same lens. And so now it's about putting the responsibility on the everyday person and the ideas and the principles rather than on myself. Like, nah, we're going to teach you what you need to do, right? So that you don't look at leadership as if it's failing. You got to look at yourself that you failing. Because if I give you the game and you don't play it the right way, then that's you losing. Because now you don't have any excuses. So I look for no excuse models, right? What you want to do? You want to make money? Well, we'll teach you a skill set to make money. You understand me? If you know, you want to deal with the politics, well, we'll teach you our idea of how we can circumnavigate some of those processes in politics to get to the process. You understand me? Of delivering results for us, right? And so, you know, I learned that you can't get the people to think a certain way unless you give them some money. Like, they need resources first. Otherwise, we're stuck in survival mode. So it's like, you can go to the streets and talk to them all you want, but until you can replace whatever they do in the streets, right? They not go truly listen to you because they like, bro, I hear you, but you know what I'm saying? I got to do this to survive. So it'd be like, all right, what about I give you this game then? Would you be willing to trade that mindset that you have over here and put that energy over here and get better results? And at the same time, you're taking less risk and you can go further. And they'd be like, all right, you understand me? So I'm going to wear my gold because I'm going to show them, like, listen, I done did it myself, right? At the end of the day, any excuses that you may make, you don't have. Like, I was talking with Meek one time in a club chat, and I remember I was giving some game to him and some other folks, and he asked me, he was like, but yeah, but where are you from? So he thought I was going to say, like, some Ohio or some square place. And I'm like, no, I'm from St. Louis and Oakland. You understand me? Like, the excuses don't really exist. We, no matter where you come from, like, we live in 2022. We all have the same resources, depending on whether you want to pick them up or not, or that you want to shift your mindset outside your environment.
That's dope. So there's two questions I want to ask. Yeah. First of all, now we're dealing with this whole metaverse, crypto, NFT. What is NFTs? Everybody's trying to figure out, what is an NFT? I hear it all the time. I'm kind of getting it. I was talking to the Earn Your Leisure brothers the other day, our brothers, and they broke it down to me to where it was like, it kind of clicked in my mind.
Yeah.
But the second question I want to ask, when you say you went to the hood and drilled, let everybody understand what you meant when you said we jumped out and we drilled, because they might get it confused.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they like drill music. Huh? Yeah. No, so drilling is a militant process where, you know, just like in the military, when they call the orders, left face, right face, it's a militant cadence where all of us are lined up. We had on black suits, you understand me? Red bow ties, white shirts, you understand me? Dress shoes, classic, like if you were seeing a Malcolm X movie, where they lined up outside the police station. And so it was an exercise of discipline, right? Mm-hmm. To showcase that we was all in one unison, right? And so learning that, we would have the drill all year round. We didn't have no summer, like we didn't get let out for summer. You understand me? So we'd be in the hot sun drilling, whether it's 100 degrees, we out there in full suits, but we wouldn't even be breaking the sweat because they also had your Black Muslim bakery and we'd be eating the right foods at the same time. And it was a showcase of who was and what they were doing. So a brother would come in there and drill, and then he starts sweating out everything that he done did last night. You understand me? So the alcohol coming through your pores, you start smelling the smoke. Brother be like, nah, we already know what you did last night. We can smell Hennessy right there through your sweat. You understand me? By the time that end of the night, it's a whole story of what you done did that whole week. You understand me? Because you should come in and improve every week. Because the brothers are basically, the model was this. I don't care if you come from jail, you get off drugs, what your situation is, you homeless, we give you a job and help you get a place to stay.
That's right.
But you have to come in, get disciplined. You got to come in on the Monday nights, Saturday night meetings. You got to come in, show up for your work. Don't mess out on nothing. We'll give you the opportunity, but it's going to be up to you to show up for it. So it was a whole process of redeeming a human being, right? And of course, that comes from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because nobody learned how to redeem the Black man better than Honorable Elijah Muhammad.
Well, that's a fact. So what is the NFT? Because I need to figure out how I can get me one or sell me or something. Not me, but stuff.
So NFTs, and you know, even saying the word NFTs, I think is what gives so many people so much difficulty, because it's understanding this concept of a thing instead of understanding what it can do, because there's really a digital token. You understand me? And this digital token can be linked in creation to digital items, right? So this moment right here, if we took a screenshot of it, it can upload, right, on what they call the blockchain. And the blockchain, of course, is basically a mathematical key where you can upload an item and it can't be hacked, it can't be destroyed, it can't be replaced. You understand me? It's creating digital ownership, right? So at first, this wasn't possible at first, right? Blockchain or Bitcoin is the first time a blockchain is created that has been unhackable. You understand me? Now, if you would think of most of the NFTs you see out there, which is non-fungible tokens, which is essentially saying that this is something that can't be exchanged for something else, right? Because it has its own singular unit of value. Right? It's like if you get a signed picture from Beyonce, that is not fungible. you can't, if somebody loses that, they can't just replace it with another picture and then try to put that autograph over it. Mm-hmm. Like, nah, this is not a fungible item. So there's also regular digital tokens that are fungible, right? A dollar is fungible because if you lose $1, you can replace it with another dollar. You can replace it with four quarters. That's the same amount of value, right? So now fungible is just a word that describes that idea. Now, I think the most important thing is what you can do with NFTs, right? It's like if I try to explain, you know, what my computer or how to create my computer, I couldn't because I don't know how to create computers, but I know what to do with it. You understand me? And so everybody who has a product right now, if you already sell a book, which you do, both of you all do, then that means that you already have something that you can sell as a product as an NFT, right? Because what you could do is you can take your book right now, take the book cover of it, take the art, and you upload it on one of these platforms, right? And one of these platforms, once you upload it, that's the process they call minting, because you're putting a transaction on the blockchain, right? And that transaction will be there forever. And what happens is it's basically like a mathematical key, and that's something that you can store in what you call a digital wallet, right? Mm-hmm. So once you take that picture anyway, I know it might sound a little difficult when we get here, mm-hmm, but when we take that picture and then on the back end, you can put a link connected to that. So you can say every time somebody buys this book, they are unlocking an ebook. So the moment that they buy this NFT, it's going to automatically send that now mathematical key to their wallet to say that now you own this thing that was minted on the blockchain. To me, it no longer owns this. My sign no longer owns this. It went from their wallet to your wallet, right? And so if you only make 10, there will only be 10, right? Nobody else can fake like they have the same one, because you can go and see that transaction like, nope, this did not come from my wallet. You do not own the authentic one, right? And so nobody can go and hack that and change that and make it something else. So you've literally created a unique item.
You can put a quantity of that onto the blockchain as much as you want.
Right.
And you can... somebody can purchase it from you, but it's directly from you because you are the owner. And only place they can get that from is from you.
And then they can't. And then there is nothing that can be done to change it.
No.
So
it's like the US, it's like the US dollar, the treasury mint. If they create something, if they create $1,000 bills, you understand me? Somebody else will have to counterfeit that because they have a process in which it's created that they can say that this came from us.
Okay.
Right. So like they are the treasury mint. So the way that they mint something is the same way that you mint something.
Okay.
Right. It's taking that same ledger system that they have to say that, no, we have this in our ledger that this came directly from us. And then we have unique identifiers on there that shows us whether this is real or whether this is counterfeit. So somebody took a screenshot of that. It also would not come with the benefits. So here's the beautiful part of it. So the same way that that person that has that NFT that you dropped on there, you can now go with a coder, a developer, and say, well, I want to airdrop that person something for buying it. So airdropping is the process of sending them something in their wallet, right? So let's say that everybody who bought your book, now you want to send them another NFT directly to those wallets connected to that NFT. So you say, now I'm going to send you an invite to a special event. So if somebody just screenshotted that, they're not getting that invite in their wallet because it's not connected to that transaction, right? So that's the beauty of these NFTs, because you can decide at any point in time to add value to them. That, listen, now that you are in this, this is like a membership. You understand me? And you can also see everybody who says they support you. Everybody run up to you like, it's like them showing you a receipt, but it's a real receipt saying that, all right, now you can use this NFT, you can connect it as a ticket to say, well, you can scan it. And if this comes up authentic, that you actually got it from my wallet, then guess what? We'll let you into this event. So now it becomes a verifiable ticket that they can use, or membership, right? Or in the case where most people use, they call PFP projects, is for profile photos, which is why you see people change their profile photo, because the first projects were created to be profile photo pictures, right? And then what happens is a person to create an art and they say, well, you can also own the intellectual property connected to this art. So as long as you own it, I can create me some designs. And instead of somebody feeling like they need to go steal my design or plagiarize them, they can just buy the design and then create a brand around it. So that's what a lot of people are doing right now. They take their crypto punks or they board their yachts or whatever, and they start creating brands out of it, where they making shirts, they making coffee mugs, or they make a cartoon, or they make other projects that are derivative of that because they own the trademark to it now, or the intellectual property and the license to it. So you also can say that, okay, well, what if somebody read your book after they got the ebook and they decided they want to sell this NFT now, right? So if they sell it and you put in there, because it has a smart contract connected to it to say that whatever I say this NFT will do, anytime somebody buy it, it's going to execute that, right? So if you say that the next person that buys it, you want them to unlock a book as well, not just the first person, but each person that buys it, no matter how many people get it. That means that if you only created 10, then only you can sell 10. But everybody who buys it, they can sell theirs on the secondary market. And you can set a percentage of royalties that you want to get paid every time somebody sell it.
Wow.
So now, the same way if somebody go take shoes and they sell it on the secondary market, if Nike had it connected as an NFT where it was authenticated, or I use Dapper Dan as the example the other day because he sold out his hoodies in like 5 minutes. And the example was like, okay, if Dapper Dan would have sold 10,000 digital hoodies that connected to 10,000 physical hoodies, and he waited a period of time before he sent them out because some people bought more than one because they don't want to resell them, right? And resell them for more. But instead, Dan could have been like, no, I'm going to sell 10,000 and then I'm going to give 5 or 10% royalty every time somebody sells it. So now when somebody decides to go sell this at $200 or $300, you understand me? He get paid every time it's sold.
Okay, wait, and
it's like scalping tickets kind of.
Yeah,
exactly.
So it makes, if you do it scalping tickets, that benefits, it's saying that these are real tickets. It's no longer illegal activity because we're going to get paid off of it regardless.
Yeah.
But now it makes the secondary market powerful because it don't matter how many you buy. You understand me? The person that initially created it go get sold regardless or get paid regardless.
Yeah.
And okay, but wait. Then
after you sell it because they get a percentage of you selling.
Absolutely.
Okay. I've told the Earn Your Leisure guys, and I say it all the time, I need it slow because I got to read things twice to get it.
Let me give you an example.
You said something about research, they said,
yeah.
Which means
that was a bar.
And then you go back and read. That's what they told me you said on one of these shows. But wait, no. I have a specific question that I need a slow answer to. If it's an NFT and it's digital, then how do I put the sweater over my head? Because what I was explaining to our brothers at Earn Your Leisure is I'm the type of person that I like for my investment to be in my hand, something I can physically touch. So how do I get the product?
All right. So if it is a digital, it unlocks a physical, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea was that you would take the digital hoodie and then it would give you a link. Right. It could be at a point in time where he said, well, you know, for the first week, we're not going to send them out. But whoever owns them on this date, I did this with my crowns. If you own this particular NFT on the 19th, then that would be the day we verify all these NFTs and who holds them on that day. Right. Because you could hold them on the first, but that don't mean you unlock it. You don't get access to whatever it unlocks until you own it on that day, which gives it a period of time for people to start selling. That was the whole point. So now people can start selling on the secondary market. Like, damn, I didn't get mine. So people be like, all right, cool. I got five of them. I'll sell you four of mine. Now, Dan just got paid. You understand me? Each time that was sold, he got paid the initial time they bought it at full price. And then he got paid it on the secondary market because they wanted to make extra money. And he created the opportunity for them, right? So now they get this link that verifies that they own it. And now they get to put in a size, they ship in the address, and it's going to automatically send them this hoodie. And now they get to unlock their physical hoodie with it. And how do you know it's authentic? Because they got the NFT that shows like, yo, this is not a fake Dapper Dan hoodie. This is a real one. I got the NFT that matches the hoodie that I own. So this might be hoodie 111, and I got the NFT 111, right? So it's also a marker of authenticity so that it can't be faked.
So what's the downside to this? Is there, in your mind, a downside? I guess you said something. I do actually pay attention to you, just so you know. I heard you say every industry there's a downside. Like there's issues that come out of anything. So help us understand that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a lot of scammers in every industry. It's a lot of projects that ain't worth nothing. I think it's just simple where it's like, I tell you, if you go do NFT, do it for two reasons. You'll get in there, buy stuff just because you like it, right? Like if, like right behind me, I got these machines to where I can take one of my pictures and it uploads in here a 3D image, a holographic image, right? So if I like an art that somebody got, now I got a digital frame to where I can sit in my house, right? So if I'm buying it for that reason, I can't lose because I'm not buying it as an investment. I'm just buying it the same way you go to the market and you buy some art that you like and you take that and you post it on your wall, transaction over with, right? If you start buying everything with the idea that it's going to be an investment and it's going to make you money in the future, you're going to lose out a lot, right? Because you can't really predict all of that. Now, so if you buy things just because you like it, there's no loss in the market. That's different. Now, if you're going in there and you're trying to make money, now, a lot of people are going to scam you because they're going to be people that make it seem like you're going to make money by getting into this project. It's going to be hype. It's going to be community built around it. And then a lot of people will exit that project. So now you own this digital asset that you can do nothing with, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just sitting in your wallet. I mean, you can still go take that picture and you can put it up, but that wasn't the reason you bought it for. And you overpaid for something that didn't have any utility, right? And this is something that I taught at the beginning of it, is that utility is the key to creating the value for this. Unless it's a real artist, I don't want to buy art from you, number one. You understand me? Somebody that just started last week and started putting out art, why would I buy art from you? You're not an artist. You hired an artist to put out art. So it's different if you hire an artist to create art that represents like a product picture that unlocks something of value, right? Let's say that, because your hair always done, Tamika, you understand me? So let's say your hairstylist says that I only got 5 appointments this week. I'm gonna put them as NFTs and it's basically unlocking which date and what time. You understand me? If you buy that NFT, then you get that appointment. Now, let's say that you can't make it, or let's say that you're a stylist.
Okay, somebody now come on, talk to me in my language. Now I'm understanding. Then what happened? Okay, you can't. Wait, let me say what I think. So then you can't make it. So now you go and sell it to somebody else. They get it and you can sell it for whatever price you want to that person. So if you pay $200, you can be like, well, if you want my appointment, you got to pay $400. Right. And then the person who was selling it, the hairstylist, she gets a percentage of the she first of all, she gets the first $200 and then she or he gets the percentage off of the resale.
That's a fact.
Oh, shoot.
So now, if you a hot stylist or somebody, a hairstylist, somebody might want to buy all your slots just to sell them. But guess what? You're going to get paid regardless. So you, and then what they might want to do is say, you know what? They might be a celebrity stylist. They might buy the slots so they can start giving it to their clients and start selling those clients. That's what people do with clothing. They do with all kinds of different things. There's a lot of secondary markets that exist. It's just the initial creator doesn't always get the benefit from it. So now you get to create all these different business models. So when I help people create NFTs, I'm helping people create businesses and new business models. That's what I'm doing. And finding different creative ways to add on to their business model that wasn't normally possible. So these NFTs allow people to do things with their business and get super creative in ways that they normally couldn't have done at first.
Brother, you broke it down. That was this. You got it now. She figured it out.
I wanted to give y'all a jewel too, because NFTs can also be used in humanitarian causes and philanthropy as well, right?
Yeah. But we're actually in an NFT situation now with Tommy Smith, the brother who raised his fist in the Olympics, where they are selling an original of the photo of him with, of course, the signature, and several organizations will benefit from the money that is received, you know. So I'm getting it. I'm
now we just got to create our own NFT because we have value.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So once we create something that we can sell, and then actually give all our followers updates or have personal rooms where if you have this NFT, you can come to this personal room and discuss this or see personal footage of things. Or if you put your book up there, you can give like a behind the scenes something about your book that only people who brought the book, the NFT, can get there. I'm getting it now, Keith.
All right.
I'm getting it now. So listen, we got to wrap up real quick because we could be here all day with you. You know that. We always could build. But I just want to know, tell us about the metaverse and how does the NFTs fit into the metaverse?
So, you know, NFTs are digital things you can own. If you have I'm sure you all, both of you all have children. So a lot of children, they play games and then they buy skins in those games, right? And the idea is that you can take these digital things that you buy in a game and you can transfer it over to other games or other places. Because it doesn't just exist in this game, it exists as something that you digitally own. So if you buy something as an NFT market, you can take that thing that you own and you can bring it into the metaverse in this digital world. I just seen Angela Benton, she just wrote out something with the NFT where you can take, she owns Streamlytics, a data company, and you can take all of your data and you can connect it to your NFT. And I believe the idea is essentially that you can take your real world profile of all the things you do and you can download it into your character and all of that data be connected to your character, right? And she has a platform basically allowing you to sell your own data so you make money off of it. Rather than companies selling it to other companies, you now get to sell your data directly to them and get paid off of it, right? But the idea is that, you know, there's going to be a digital world where people are going to be submersed into this new era of social media, right? Meta, by Facebook standards, you understand me, is not, I don't think it's going to be the one that pop off that most people want to get into. I think that's going to be an overly policed social media, media that I'm not promoting, right? I don't really promote metaverse, period, besides the education behind it and the opportunities that people can use. Right? Like they want to use metaverse and empathy training for police officers. Right? Now, I can't tell you whether this go work, but they do say that it increases empathy to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. Right? And then the brain submerses itself into that experience. And then once you leave out of it, you can now empathize with that person because you literally have experienced what it was like to be a Black man getting pulled over. You understand me in those moments. And so they doing this with nursing homes. They're doing this with all sorts of different things and even education. In the education field, that people are able to retain information more when they're submersed into it in these environments. And then in these metaverses, we can create our own world. We can create any type of environment that we want to have or see. You understand me? You can be there at a Marcus Garvey speech, you understand me, duplicated, and you can sit in the audience and you can be up there and see what it was like to be there. You can be in ancient Egypt, right, with black faces with the nose on there before they knocked everything down, and you can experience what it was like to go through true history instead of, you know, the white erasure of history. Like, so the metaverse we can use as education platforms. You can host events in there. Right. You can create games in there. You can take your NFTs. You can bring them into the metaverse. People have full galleries that they create with their NFTs. People teach classes in there because you can also get your streams. People, I mean, in the future, I'm sure the metaverse is going to be a very weird place that people are doing all sort of crazy, chaotic things in there. And then it's not saying that you have to be completely submerged in your phone. You can be in the metaverse just through your computer. Right. I know Idris Sandu is dropping some hardware where he's going to have some glasses that's like this. You understand me, to where it overlays the metaverse on top of the real world so that you're not completely just submersed into this virtual reality. Mm-hmm. Right. So that it doesn't take up all of your senses, but you can use the metaverse the same way that you use the internet. You understand me? It's social media where you don't have to completely be connected to it. Okay. So the metaverse is just the future of the internet at the end of the day. And there's an opportunity for billions and billions of dollars to be created. They're already funding billions of dollars. So anytime I see a new sector, right, I say, well, if we learn the skills on how to build that and we get in early, then those are billions of dollars that can come our way, right? Mm-hmm. That's the whole point of looking at this metaverse. I don't care if people play games or they create their avatars and all of that crap in there. I want to be the owners of it and create our own thing. You understand me? Because even on social media, people are spending 5 to 6 hours today on it. So people are already going to be in the metaverse because that's where the habit is anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not an if, it's a when at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And if we have our own metaverse, at least we can capitalize off it and mm-hmm. we can decide what our people minds is submersed into.
Makes sense. Awesome. I want to say one thing. We're going to close with this. So high level conversations.
Yes, sir.
Is that that's the new podcast that's coming? And tell them about Infinite Wealth Strategies. Break all of that down as we end up. Go out there, let them know where to find you. All of that, break it down as we go out.
So high level conversations, man, is exactly what it is. It's way too many low level conversations. When I sit down, people don't have a lot of safe spaces to be intelligent, man. A lot of people that I have conversations with, you know, we dumb it down a lot for audiences. And depending on the way that you build your platform, it's like you don't have a platform to showcase your mind that people actually want to hear. Right. Then I'm going to talk about subjects and I don't have no bar. You understand me? I can go as far as I want to and say what I want to because I'm free. Mm-hmm. You understand me? So I want to have high level conversations in all areas, whether it's politics, whether it's money, you understand me, liberation, whether it's, you know, a spirituality, any and everything. You know, I got some dope people lined up thus far, but I also have concepts that I want to give to the culture. It's taking like what we've seen in a conscious community and then taking it to a higher level of aesthetic, you understand me, platform and mainstream to where we can give concepts that really take us to a higher frequency and a higher vibration. Mm-hmm. So it's gonna get real dangerous. It's gonna be powerful. I'm gonna make people change their platform in the way they do things. Because mm-hmm. Let me ask y'all this question. Who is the smartest black man in history or woman? Who's the smartest?
The smartest black man in history? There's so many. I don't know. I don't want to give nobody that one title. Who would you give that title?
Yeah.
I mean, it is a tough question. I do have an answer. But the idea of that question, if I ask you who are like the smartest white men in history, you got like a list of top 10 we'll go through based on living white men. You understand mm-hmm. me? And the issue is that we don't really have a list of like the top 10 smart. We got top 10 rappers. But we don't value intelligence in that same capacity, you know? So we don't really look at each other and measure each other based on intelligence. So people don't showcase their intelligence for that reason.
There's no measurement. Nobody values it.
So I want us to be able to now have a measurement where we'd be like, damn, him being smart is a reason that he's popular, a reason that he should have a platform, a reason that people should listen to him or look up to this person. Or she being intelligent. So I want to add intelligence as a metric now that people look at as success.
Right.
But we can look
not
at the
just popular, and the but,
Bill Gates mm-hmm. and the Steve Jobs and all them and be like in the Einsteins and say that these are the smartest white men easily off the top of our head. Because we give them an intelligence marker as mm-hmm. a reason for their success. But we don't do that in our community. Mm-hmm. We might even call a person a genius, but we still don't look at how smart they are. Right. Mm-hmm. So high level conversations is coming. It's going to be on the EYL network. We're going to do some amazing things. I got some powerful guests lined up. And then of course I got myself. So I want y'all to be on there because when we have a high level conversation,
yes, sir.
Love that. Yeah, we got
it. We ready. Listen, we know you coming. We ready.
We know exactly what, listen, I got stuff I want to talk about. So tell us, so people, you said you help people to set up their NFTs and all of that. And I'm assuming that that's through Infinite Wealth Strategies.
Yeah, that's Infinite Wealth Strategies. Mm-hmm. So I'm also creating an incubator for developers and artists to where everybody has ideas for their projects. They can come through us and then we can create their projects for them. Currently, we have the Infinite Wealth Strategies where my students, they flip NFTs, they create NFTs. You understand me? Which is basically saying that they're creating businesses and they're making money and they're creating products and projects. Not only do we do that in the Infinite Wealth Strategies, we also teach cryptocurrency, how to understand it, how to find projects. You understand me? How to sell, trade, and buy cryptocurrency. We also teach you how to create books. I got a 3 to 4 week book strategy where you can create an ebook, take the idea out your head and stop procrastinating. I always say procrastination is the abortion clinic of ideas. And I think that's a mental health issue that 80-90% of people have because of lack of focus. So we teach that. My father teaches a class every Monday, a live class. It's a manhood class. You understand me? For business development and mental development. So every Monday, he's been doing that for almost a year now. You understand me? That you want to get access to that live one. I sometimes come in there and do Sunday consultations where I can give you specific advice on how you can break into this industry with whatever industry that you're into. So whether you're in politics, whether you're a hairdresser, whether you sell books, whatever it is, I'll give you the game on how you can get in for yours, right? Mm-hmm. And it's really about the community, because the community in there, they teaching you things about staking, the process of putting your money up to earn interest, or they teach you about different projects that you can get in. It's a whole real blockchain, intelligent community. We teach you how to create trust, not just trust with each other, but like trust for like—
No, trust, yes. Yes, because my mom, she had a stroke 2 years ago, March 10th, and I had to learn in a very short time period, in order for her to be able to get the help that she needs, how to create a trust, what to do about my parents' money. And I can tell you, there are a lot of people that do not have a clue of any of that in our community. Uh-huh. Well, listen,
and that's where I I just want to say the last thing on trust is, once you understand that America is a trust, America is a corporation. So every Black family should have a trust and should be set up as a corporation. Corporations have more power than people in this country. You understand me? We live in an oligarchy. You understand me? We live in a world where it's owned by a special interest group and corporations. So when you operate through trust, you operate through corporations, you set it up like the Kardashians do. They got a church where they run their taxes through. You are now operating in the way you're supposed to in America. And we give away a lot of our rights because we don't understand our natural rights and the order of things in America. So you can find me, Infinite Wealth Strategies, 19keys_19keys, on all platforms. You can tune in to High Level Conversations. Come in on the EYL Network March 19th. You understand me? And if you're feeling dangerous, tap in with 19 keys.
My God.
My brother, we appreciate you, man. Thanks for breaking it down. I appreciate you. Love your success. Continue to grow. Hopefully you opening up these minds. I see a lot of minds opening up, man. Keep doing what you do.
That's right. Yes, thank you, brother.
I can't wait to have y'all on the platform so we can have a high level.
We can't wait.
Right away. Thank you. We got to have you back on again. So that as people learn this stuff, they, you know, as it gets deeper and they have more questions, that we're hitting them on every angle, making sure that we've been saying that on our show, folks might not like it, but yes, politics is important, but we're going to be focusing a lot on money, our money and our spending power, because we think that that is, of course, sort of like the next level, if you will. I don't think that means it is. That it takes the place of our politics, because we have to understand the political nature of our communities, how things operate, and also how now we're hearing that the government is planning to get involved with crypto and try to put regulations. So you have to understand the politics in order to understand how to deal with your money. But we still need to focus more on our sustainability from a financial perspective. So that's going to be
war without money. It's simple. You can't go to war without money or resources. Right. And if the politicians that you do get behind, you got to look at, you know, are they getting behind things that are good for us financially?
That's
right. So if they're going to implement things that we can benefit from these crypto bills, then that's lobbying, right? Mm-hmm. You know, my saying, poor people vote, rich people lobby.
That's right. Amen. That's right. All right. Thank you, King.
Appreciate you.
Peace, guys.
Yo, I'm hype. The Black Effect is live. This April 27th, the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival is headed down to Atlanta's very own Pullman Yards. Last year was incredible, and this year will be even more thrilling, especially with Nissan coming back along for the ride. Nissan is returning with some empowering activations to support Black excellence in the STEAM fields. Have a podcast idea you've been eager to share with the culture? Well, Nissan is back with the Pitch Your Podcast Lounge. You'll have the chance to record your podcast idea and share it with the Black Effect Podcast Network team. But that's not all. Nissan is taking the stage to spotlight some of the HBCU scholars from their own Thrill of Possibility Summit, Nissan's action-packed weekend of community building, mentorship, and professional development for HBCU scholars pursuing professions in STEAM. The Black Effect Podcast Festival is the event to be at. You will not want to miss this, because no matter where life takes you, Nissan will dial up the thrill in your adventures. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details. Seeing our communities grow and thrive is something we care deeply about here at Black Tech Green Money. State Farm Insurance also cares about the growth of Black communities. They're actively investing in programs and initiatives that help provide financial literacy, give early career advice, and grow Black-owned businesses, thus leading to generational wealth. which helps protect the future of our communities. We want to build a future that we all can be proud of. State Farm understands that representation alone doesn't equate to authenticity. It also requires active sponsorship of programs like the AXO, a year-long program that recognizes and rewards high school students for their academic and cultural achievements, along with funding programs like Project Ready, a national Urban League program committed to educational achievement of Black and brown youth that has awarded over $11 million in scholarship offers to date. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities and can have a long-lasting impact. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
That's how we own it. So our brother, the next guest, which I was super excited about because we had 19 Keys booked. And then we got this alert in the media that said that one of our friends, our dear brothers, is now putting this NFT process into action, working on putting it into action. But it was a different industry because, like I said, I'm thinking art, I'm thinking, you know, things like that. And now looking at what is happening in this example is very different. So let me just introduce to those people who are listening to Street Politicians today who may not know that there is a man who runs restaurants in New York and has all kinds of other businesses. You know, Don Poo got mad. But he is a franchise expert, an entrepreneur of extraordinaire, and the former executive vice president of MCA Records, which makes so much sense because when you go to his famous restaurant, Brooklyn Chop House, the walls are full of all the artists and entertainers who have been there, who are great supporters of, of his.
Best spot in the city.
And
best
that's my spot.
That's my spot.
That's right. Chop House. Welcome to Street Politicians. What up, Poo? Don Poo.
What up? What up, guys? How you guys doing?
We blessed and highly favored, man. Thank you. I know you got a busy day. You always moving. You always on the run. Every time I see you, you going someplace. Yeah. Every time I look on the internet, you in the best rooms with, you know, everywhere. I'm like, Poo don't miss a spot. And then I see you in Chop House like you just a regular worker, man. So I love the energy, man. I love it.
Thanks, Simon. We got to show up. You know, we got to, you know, this is nothing new to me. You know, we come from this grind. You know, entertainment kind of prepared me for this grind. You know, the rest of my run business is not easy, but, you know, we've been blessed and highly favored to, you know, have this opportunity to create a very, you know, unique concept with Brooklyn Chop House. And, you know, we've exposed it to, you know, all of our peers. And they've been very supportive. We've gotten a lot of support. And now we're, you know, going from our first restaurant that opened in 2018 to our newest restaurant, which is going to be our flagship in Times Square. We're blessed to have that. We just opened that. And, you know, we're doing some creative things within the restaurant space now when it comes to NFTs with a section of our restaurants that's not open yet. It's soon to come. We're still developing the concept, but, you know, I would love to share exactly, you know, how this application, this NFT, could, how we're applying it to restaurants and, you know, a membership only section of the restaurant.
It just clicked from the last conversation to this one. So it's not like just a regular dinner. You're talking about an experience. And then, like, being
there's a certain place you can't go unless you are part of this.
So it's unlocking your private area or whatever.
Exactly. It's unlocking your private area and experience that will be unlike the experience you would normally get at Brooklyn Chop House, which is great, by the way. Mm-hmm. But we're providing, it's a different floor, it's actually in the building, but it will be a different business, a different floor, different entry. So to be separated from what we have now is the concept. And it's our wine cellar private NFT membership only experience, which hopefully we'll be launching, you know, as we work through all of the particulars with everything in with New York City. We'll probably be opening in a few months. So we're excited about that experience.
I'm so excited. I'm like, you know, just ready to find out things. Now, first of all, you said something that I thought was so true. Watching you, Don, work like you're a regular employee in your own restaurant. We see you hustling, bustling, managing, talking, meeting people. And I watched Sylvia of Sylvia's restaurants in Harlem for years, because that's like the kitchen in my house. I go to Sylvia's and pick up all my food. I watched that behavior, and it shows me how the longevity has been accomplished by her brand, for her brand, her restaurant, her family, that she went to every table. She talked to every person. She rubbed every baby. She fixed every problem. She was on top of everything that happened there. And they have continued that, and we see it in you. So talk to us a little bit about that grind, you know, that you, where that came from.
No, that came from earlier on, from, you know, myself growing up in Brooklyn. I had my first job when I was 12 years old. I was packing bags at a supermarket. So I was always about service, right? I was always, you know, I was making, you know, 10 cents here, 25 cents there, but, you know, change turns into, you know, dollars, right? So all I learned from a young age that as we serve people, and as we, you know, work hard, and it's all about the customer service, right? I would carry packages and bags for older adults and the elderly that couldn't climb the steps and, you know, had walk-up apartments. I would help them take their bags to their homes, and they would, you know, give me a better tip or whatever. So I just learned the service business earlier on. So that kind of carried with me for, you know, basically my entire life, from managing, you know, artists, which I got into the entertainment business, from working with Mary J. Blige, from managing Foxy Brown to, you know, assisting Notorious B.I.G. here and there on in different areas when he was on the road, and always wanted to be in that, you know, in that industry. So I got an opportunity to diversify, you know, once I got into the music industry, into food and beverage and franchising. And then from there, I went on to start my own brand, which is Brooklyn Chop House. And, you know, able to carry on some of those same characteristics that I learned from earlier on into my business and, you know, into my grind. You know, I've always been grinding, so I never stopped. So I'm thankful that, you know, the concept is working. And yes, you're right. You have to touch every table. You have to, you know, talk to people. You have to greet people. You have to show up. You know, customer service is everything. You know, you can have great food and terrible service, but when the two meet and match, and, you know, you have great service and, you know, great food, then it's unanimous that you have both. That's when, you know, those two worlds meet. You possibly could survive, because obviously we know the restaurants are a tough business. You know, 80 to 85% of them unfortunately fail in the first 2 years. So we just have to, you know, be dedicated, find great locations, find great concepts, and execute.
That's the truth. So what made you decide that, like, this is such an innovative thing that you're combining NFTs with your restaurant? Like, what made you come up with the idea? What made you feel like, I need to be involved in NFTs right now?
Well, I think this is the next movement, and what we're learning from NFTs, the industry is very new, but what we're learning is, as you know, as artists, because once upon a time, when artists specifically, right, you had a painting, they sell it one time and that's it. There was no recurring residuals associated with, you know, something that's unique, that's tangible, that, you know, you can sell over and over and over again. So now in the digital space, the metaverse, you create something that's unique. And every time this this NFT or special experience is sold or transferred, a percentage goes to, you know, the person that mints it. So it's a different concept, and I think it's a unique opportunity to apply it to restaurant membership programs. So there's one other company that, you know, was on the cutting edge of this was the Fly Fish Club with Gary Vee. He actually launched one. I don't believe they have a restaurant yet in place, but they launched it, I believe, earlier this year, end of last year, and they were very successful. And I think they sold out their membership availability, and they're basically proof that this blueprint or this concept will possibly, you know, it didn't start yet, but the excitement and the network is there for people that want, you know, this opportunity to be part of, you know, an NFT restaurant membership club per se.
So now, what are your thoughts on Black folks getting into this NFT space? Like, do you feel like this is something that we should be rushing to, or would you have people sort of, I mean, you got to take caution with everything, but I'm hearing a lot of people say this is the next move for us as a community to be more in control of trading our own money, but, you know, without having the middleman of the banks and, you know, others in it and taking their percentage before it gets to whoever we want to support. We want to support Don Poole. Don Poole wants to support Tamika and my son. How do we do that without the middleman? So do you think that that's the right move for us as a people?
Again, the industry is new, but I think the concept is right, right? So as this exchange or this new industry, you know, evolves, I think you'll see that, yes, we should always diversify. So So the answer to that question is yes, you should not jump in with everything you have, but diversify into this market of NFTs like you would, you know, any other, you know, securities and exchange. Like, yeah, you just have to be well diversified with everything. But yes, I think the concept makes sense for us to be involved in 100%. It's still new. We don't know how it's going to actually pan out yet, but the concept makes a lot of sense.
So what are some of the things that this high level, that this NFT that you want to, you know, for these exclusive members, what are some of the things that you, I don't know if you have it all planned out yet, but what are some of the things that you want to offer to these members?
So they'll have exclusivity for reservations, private events, private art events, other NFT launches, the opportunity to network with other cryptocurrency, people that's in that world, so that they could get, you know, network and get understandings about how this application could be applied across the board. Opportunity to, you know, there's going to be different types of culinary experiences that we're going to bring to the members. So it's a wide variety of opportunities, and I would say it would be art, music, you know, culinary and culture that we're all going to bring together in a unique experience that would not be readily available anywhere else.
Wow. And now if I don't want to use my reservation for tonight, I can sell it to another person, allow them to take it, and you get a percentage?
It wouldn't work like exactly like that. Think more like a members only club. It's only for you, but you have the ability to bring other people in on your reservation. It was for the token holders only and their guests. So it would go as far as that. It wouldn't be something that you could sell.
Well, I like
you
it.
Get all these, when I say by that, I didn't mean that you can sell. Yes, it could be on your exchange. You could sell your membership, but you wouldn't be able to. It's not transferable to let someone else come in.
I got it. I think you need the next model of a Soho house. We have to have this conversation at another time, because I would love to be a member of a Soho house model that is owned by a Black person, right? And so I just think that's something that you should think about. You're probably already working on it, because you like, oh yes, already. It's like you're already.
No. That's basically the model. A members, a membership, right? So there'll be different tiers, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what the model is.
But I want you to have a pool. And then I want you to be in Miami with the pool and the beach, the same exact way that the current Soho House exists. Question that I have, and we know you got folks calling you and it's time for you to move on. I have two questions. One, we still going to see you in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Chop House, right? Because that's my favorite. I know Times Square, but I still need to be able to go to the bridge.
Okay, say no more, but you got to see the new one. You got to see the new one. So hopefully I can get you there and you can experience that as well. But yeah, you know, you're definitely one of the early supporters, and I'm, you know, that's your house. Let me know whenever you want to go. Just let us know.
Us and LuShawn Thompson, because LuShawn Thompson is your PR person that is unofficial, but she goes out, tells everybody.
She's amazing.
The only other thing
is, shout out to LuShawn.
The only other thing is, just to make sure that people understand, they still have to pay the cost of their plate and whatever the experience is.
Yes.
They just get a membership to be able to get in, but you still buy your food.
It's a membership.
People don't know that. I'm just telling you.
Correct. That's correct. Unless you get a higher tier membership. So what we're working on, what we're trying to formulate, is a higher tier membership that actually comes with that culinary experience as well. Obviously, it'll be, you know, a more expensive membership, but it'll come with that culinary experience, and it will come with a certain amount of reservations per year for that.
Wow. Oh, so that's the one that I can't afford, but okay. Get me in the basic. I ain't at the other one yet.
That's what we're talking about. Listen, thank you, man. Thank you for having me.
Always on the cutting edge, man. Whether it's from music to the culinary space, you've always been on the cutting edge, and I know you're destined for even bigger things with this NFT. I'm looking forward to it. Maybe I can get on somebody's juice cart that can afford the membership, and maybe they'll bring me as one of their guests. You know what I'm saying? I can't wait to get involved. But I appreciate you. Love you, man. Keep doing what you do.
Appreciate it.
More success. Keep doing it, man.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Peace. Right. Man, Don Poole, man. I've been in this industry for years, and Don Poole is one of the greats. You know, I was there when he found Shine. He's been with Foxy,
he did?
Yeah.
Shine? I didn't know that.
Yeah, Don Poole found Shine. So just watching him continue to, like he said, diversify and evolve into this, and the Brooklyn Chop House is amazing. So I know the new flagship restaurant is probably going to be times a million, and the whole membership that we can't afford is going to be something extra. So hopefully, man, you know, Don Poole let us sneak in and peek, at least peek. I don't need to eat nothing. Just let me peek at, you know,
I'm getting me an NFT at Brooklyn Chop House. I just can't get to the top tier where the food is included. That's going to be real.
Eyes poke.
No, you ain't. Don't say that. We don't claim being poor at all.
No, we don't. Well, listen, I just can't afford the top tier.
You don't even know the price of it.
Yeah, I just know it is. Because when you start saying
the top tier, we're not even going to try the top tier.
When you start saying exclusive and all this. And I see a number down here that's a little crazy. I didn't even read that number because it hasn't been, you know, said it was for sure. But I'm just not going.
I wonder if that number is per year.
No, that's how.
Or do you just
the
get
membership
one...
starts?
Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
But what I'm asking you, damn, we should have asked Pooh. Is that every year or once you buy the NFT, you in?
Yeah, you buy the NFT and you in. And then, you know what I'm saying? And that's the NFT. So it probably will be about, he probably have a certain amount that he sells for the first year. And then he'll probably sell more at a higher price until, you know what I'm saying? And then people will be able to sell him for more.
Yeah, I need to know. Well, yeah, because like if you want a membership at the Soho House, you pay like up to, I think it's like $5,000 every year. Mm-hmm. So I just wonder if an NFT works different.
Well, the NFT is about, for NFTs, it's different because what it is like they say, you buy the NFT, you own that NFT. So you mm-hmm. own that token. So whatever comes with that token, you can get.
But that token can expire in a year, maybe.
It doesn't expire, no.
We have to ask.
That's why you purchase it.
How do you
know? Because that's what the whole thing of the NFT is that you own the NFT.
But you can own the NFT. I mean,
no.
I'm just trying to understand how you know.
Because that's what it is. It is something that you own.
You know, purchase. I can't stand when you learn stuff. Because then you become the super expert. Can't nobody tell you
it ain't
nothing,
about can't nobody tell me. You just asked me a question. I'm giving you the facts about the situation.
How do you know?
Because I've been studying. And when you buy the NFT, you own the NFT.
You okay. It. It's not rental.
No, it's no rental.
All right.
So what happens is you can sell it for more. You can utilize it, you know, with different situations. But you can't, like he said, you can't sell a reservation for a night. No, you can sell your whole NFT. And then you now that person owns the membership. You can sell your membership.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. Oh, well, you want to sell your membership when the thing is like hot.
Exactly.
Hot.
Then you can say, I paid this amount. I'm going to need this amount for
it. Yeah, well, you might need to.
And then what happens is after he do that, then he can say, you know what? We got a overwhelming amount of people who want to be a part of this. We only had this much. We're going to put 20 more on the market on these things. Now the price is sky high. 20 more.
And then you could sell. Wow. We got to really, I got to know more about this.
Yeah, this I'm trying to tell you. Just listen to what I'm saying, man.
Yeah, but, you know, you know what my problem is? I still see life as me giving to others. Like, in my mind, I'm not thinking enough about how I can make this happen for myself. I'm over here thinking, oh, okay, so then how do I, like, if I buy one and then I sell it, how much more does he need me to sell it for so he could get a percentage? Like, I need to learn, retrain myself to also understand that I also can participate.
Yeah, the thing is, whenever you sell it, he's going to have, when they sell you the NFT, when they sell it to you, it's going to be the clause that said, okay, to resell it, if you resell this at such and such, whatever, I get this percentage.
Right. That's in the smart contract.
That's going to be in the smart contract. Mm-hmm. So you're going to already know how much you're going to make because you're going to say, all right, I got to give him this amount of percentage. So when you sell it, you're going to know what you're going to make.
Okay, well then, hey, I guess it makes sense. I'm gonna be, you know, trying to get closer.
Oh, I'm in tune now. They in trouble. I'm about to get rich, man.
This is what I'm talking about.
Right, listen,
you learn one thing,
and that's all you gotta learn.
That's it. You like, I'm
off
to
the races. Listen,
how did richness come from?
Because what happens is when you understand the worth and the value that you have. Right? And you utilize that, the multifaceted that our lives are, that we have things that possess that are going to be historical sometime. And right now, if we utilize those things and make those NFTs at this time, we can get a lot of money.
You know what I probably could have sold as an NFT? I don't know. I was going to say, for the Women's March, you know, I wrote my speech. I wrote it physically with my hands.
You can still sell it. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Understand?
I don't know. Who cares now?
No,
you know what
still
I mean?
Like, it's the people that love that speech, and they're like, "Wow, my God, I want that speech." And you put 20 of them at $20,000 on the internet. People
you like, can't put 20 of them if you wrote only one. The original.
They all originals because they you are giving them.
Do you have to write it again and again and again?
You can create. It's like books. If you put 12 of your books on the thing and you sell them with your autograph on it, boom, 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 and these are only, they have their number that says this is the number, only these are authentic. The blockchain will authenticate it. It stays there. Somebody buys it from you.
But I thought the purpose of it is that it is my physical speech that I wrote. There's only one of those.
But it doesn't matter if it's only one. It's you are right and you sign. It's just like when you go to the thing, somebody got 10 pictures of the man like this and he signs all of them.
Right. Okay. So then that means I have to duplicate it somehow.
You duplicate it by sign. Oh, every time you duplicate it, it's...
I think you're not understanding what I'm saying. I'm saying I physically sat with a pen and paper.
Yes.
And I wrote with the pen the speech. So I'm thinking that the value is that it is the original speech that I wrote.
It is. The value is
original. So how do I sell 10 of one original thing?
Because you still own it, right? It's like you duplicating. You can duplicate the one thing that you had. You signed all of these 10. Okay. This is the same that you are putting out to the world.
But it can't be.
People can say only 10 of these in the world. What do you mean it can't be?
Because I have to write it 10 times.
You don't have to write. What is wrong with you?
What do you mean? He said 19 keys said crazy, to unlock the physical.
Tamika.
You use the digital to unlock the physical.
Tamika.
Okay, so I only have one piece of paper in my house that the speech is on. So you tell me how I'm going to get that to 10 people.
What I'm trying to tell you is
copy machine.
You can recreate it. Like you can copy it, but it's and you sign it. Right? Okay. It's your it's authenticated.
I told
because it
you
came
I need it
you.
Slow, so don't yeah, try it's to come act from like you. You it's a lot of people like me that need it explained in 5 or 6 different ways, and I don't appreciate you going to sit there
the
and try to say
one,
I'm not
the
well.
The main one that's on the paper, you can sell at a remarkable amount of
money. Oh, now you want to go to my
you
main
You can, because now it's the main paper. You can say, for this one, that I can physically send you the original paper, but you can have, it's just like when people have copies of the picture and they sign it.
Right, okay.
Right? Just having those words and know that they was authenticated by you, that came from you, and the only place they can get it is from you.
Okay.
Gives it the value to me.
All right, okay. Well, you know, I still have questions, but I'm getting better, so that's enough.
Anyway, thank you for another dope episode. We appreciate y'all for always supporting us, man. Shout out to 19 Keys. Shout out to our brother Don Poole. You know, continue to educate us, man, because I'm ready. I'm about to take over now.
Lord,
you know, hopefully
Jesus.
Don Poole will give me one of these memberships, you know, for the people. You know what I'm saying? Give one for the people that we could get the high-level experience. But, you know, it's always a pleasure talking to our brothers and being educated and watching them evolve and learn.
We got to get some women in these spaces.
Yes, we got some, man. We're going to come up with some women that know about these spaces, and we're going to be interviewing them real soon. But in the meantime, keep supporting us. Keep showing us love. Tell us what you hate. Tell us what you love. We want to hear it all because we the number one show in the world, the number one street politicians, man. And I might not always be right. Tamika Mallory may not always be wrong, but we will both always, and I mean always, be authentic.
Peace.
That's how we own it!
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.